Hi, I'm Kylie.
And I'm Elliot.
We're hosts of Bad Dad, Rad Dad, a Snack Labs podcast where we look for better dads one movie at a time. Every week, we talk about the movies we watched, the thoughts and feelings they brought up in us, and the best and worst dads we found in them.
Our weekly movie picks can span decades, genres, languages, and more. Plus, we keep it totally spoiler-free so you can discover movies that you want to watch.
So join us every Thursday on our silly little movie journey to hear about the movies we watched that week.
And the dads they made us wish we had. Because
my dad's dead.
And my dad's a deadbeat.
But as far as we're concerned,
not all dads have to be bad.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedy-ad-free. That's amazon.com/comedy-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, baby.
Hello, my love.
Another week, another conversation.
Yep.
About relationships and intimacy and sex and weird internet shit.
Yeah, weird body shit.
Yeah, weird body shit. What's going on? You're falling apart, are you?
Well, I seem to be having some sort of like my immune system just seems to be, I think there's like I'm having multiple symptoms in my body that I can only assume are connected because they're happening at all of the same time.
Right.
And it's leading me down like a magical mystery tour of potential.
Are you pregnant?
Diseases I could have. No, I took a pregnancy test. I'm not pregnant. My period is 10 days late.
What? Whoa. So could you have gotten a false negative?
I don't think so. I don't think so.
Did you buy a dollar store pregnancy test?
No, I did buy the Life brand though. So
how much is a pregnancy? How much are those running these days?
$15.
That's not bad.
$15 for a test, or you can usually get two tests in the same box for $25 or something.
And the two tests would be to get a second opinion?
Yeah, exactly. I know false negatives are possible, but I just don't think that's it because it's coming on the heels. Well, first of all, I just had like a little skin thing and I thought it was psoriasis. There's no way, nobody knows anything about psoriasis. So you can't like get a diagnosis.
Hold on. I don't think that's.
Look it up.
Is that true? That's true. We don't know anything about psoriasis and no one can give a no.
It's an autoimmune disorder.
Right.
That.
I mean, I don't know. I truly don't know. I don't know enough about it.
No.
But that sounds wild to me.
It's hard to get a diagnosis of psoriasis. Or it's often misdiagnosed as psoriasis. But but anyway, I'm having this wild like skin thing that I've had before, but now it's like completely inflamed and like spreading all over my legs and arms and face.
Jesus.
And then I got a cold sore, which is another way the body goes, like, something's stressful.
Right.
And my period is now 10 days late. So that's obviously stressful. But, like, mentally, emotionally,
feeling okay?
I was feeling totally fine until yesterday when I had a complete meltdown.
When you feel like that, does that take a big blow to your libido?
Yeah, like I can't imagine the next time I'm gonna like feel comfortable having sex, because I just like what I realized yesterday in the height of my meltdown was that I was like having all this like self-hatred for my body.
That's how I get too when I get sick.
Yeah.
I get the same way.
And it's like if
my body was not my body, I'd want to hurt it.
Interesting.
Like, you know what I mean? Not like physically, but like emotionally. I'd want to just like put it down, make it feel.
You should talk to somebody about that. That seems unhealthy.
I get this sort of like self-hatred when I'm I'm sick now. Like I have a lung infection now, and I find I come down on myself so hard, and which then in turn like affects my everything. Like it affects everything. Like my confidence.
It's a downward spiral.
Yeah.
No, I get that. When I was like sort of like. I'd come down of like my meltdown and I was like, whoa, you know, there's potentially like maybe whatever's going on is hormonal. Like there's a lot of the symptoms that are like, these are like, get your fucking hormones checked. So I'll do that as well.
But 10 days of no period. That seems like a really long time.
Yeah.
You should never fucking Google what's wrong with you, but like, what's Google saying about that? Is that like
just that it could be so often psoriasis, cold sores and delayed periods can all have to do with levels of stress. Now someone told me it might have been the acupuncturist I saw last week. Because my massage therapist said, hey, acupuncturists are really good at helping clear up skin stuff. So I went to the acupuncturist and she suggested that it can actually be a delayed response to something that happened months before. Sure. And the little psoriasis patches on my legs that are now like full, like taking over my whole leg, that were new, like sort of I'd seen them a year ago, but they kind of cleared up in Mexico just in the sun. And then, this year they showed up like around a pretty stressful work thing that I was doing back in October. That's how long it's been going on. Mm-hmm. But then they just kind of recently exploded. And when someone was like, have you been stressed lately? I was like, well, I think I was managing like the pandemic stress, but if this is like a stress response to something that happened a couple of months ago, then yeah, like I was super fucking stressed out in November, December for a period of time.
Right.
And super stressed out on that job when I was like, got my first cold sore. Yeah. And,
you know what though, to make that statement, like, yeah, I think I'm handling the stress of the pandemic all right.
Yeah.
Man, I don't think any of us can actually truly say that with certainty. It's like you might think you are, and you might feel you are, but really I feel like time will tell, you know. Like I think that's something like you'll look back on in 5 years and go, yeah, no, I did good. Or you'll go, yeah, actually I was fucked, like that really fucked me up.
Isn't there a statistic about something like for 7 generations people will be experiencing the effects of this pandemic?
Yeah, I don't know. I've never heard that, but that doesn't surprise me, you know.
Yeah, I was just listening to our national broadcaster talking about basically how we need to rebuild for people and etc. But yeah, I guess I do think about it a lot, but my lifestyle hasn't changed that much.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I guess that's why I feel like I'm doing okay with the pandemic stress, because I don't feel like really too much has changed in my social life and like how I, the things that I like to do, which are like cooking and walking and
yeah,
being outside and
well,
blah, blah, blah.
I'm sorry you're not feeling good. I hope hope you get to the bottom of this, because that sucks.
I'll keep you posted. I just wanted to list all my symptoms there, so in case anybody...
Yeah, great. So if anybody's wondering about me, I have a lung infection. you know, my PFTs are somewhat normal. I'm on antibiotics, and I should be taking some probiotics, but I haven't picked up any. So there we go. There's my little health update.
Don't fuck around with no probiotics.
Okay, hey.
I mean, listen, that's the answer to what I'm going through, too. 100%, like, is whatever's going on in my gut. Like, you got to take care of your gut.
You do. You do.
You really do.
Right. Cool. What else? Anything else interesting going on?
Not in, like, sex and body world, although I did just get a book in the mail.
Mm-hmm.
Let me show you.
All right. I got a book in the mail too.
What'd you get?
The Way of the Superior Man.
Woohoo.
I have it. Here it is.
I got some bad news.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
What's that?
So we have a friend and Moto community member named Matthew Remsky, who has a podcast called Conspirituality.
Leah was listening to that the other day, and I was in her kitchen while she was cooking, and I think I was taking a shit or something, and I could hear it in the other room, and it was this like charismatic fella talking about yoga and cults, and I was like, dude, that sounds like some shit Matthew Remsky would say. And then I came out and I was like, what is this? What are you listening to? And she was like, Conspirituality. And I was like, wait a minute, let me see this. And I looked and I was like, oh, fuck, it is Matt.
Mm-hmm.
What about him? Did he have some choice words for...
He had some choice words. Okay, this is a little bit removed.
Get into the gossip.
Okay, just for context on this, The Way of the Superior Man was written by David Data. You and I, Jeremy, have often talked about John Wineland,
yep,
who is a teacher of... sort of this kind of framework. His partner is a woman who's a leader in the Kundalini yoga community,
mm-hmm,
named Guru Jagat. I don't know how you actually say her name. J-A-G-A-T. Yeah. And I don't mean, maybe this isn't like tea, but she's been perpetuating, I guess, some COVID conspiracy theories.
Ooh.
And that's John Wineland's partner, which just bums me out a little bit.
Partner as in lover?
Yeah.
Oh shit. Well, like, you know, we're in a weird time. We're definitely in a weird time, especially when it comes to... I was reading this article the other day, Brian and I, and we were talking about it, about how there's this huge link between QAnon and like, and this is different. This is a different thing. I'm talking about a different thing right now, but like, I do feel like there are maybe some like parallels, maybe, but QAnon and Instagram, like wellness accounts, like wellness influencer accounts, you know? So like these people that are like very spiritual and very into wellness and well-being, and somehow that's like spilled into the territory of like super crazy QAnon shit. And whether that's because it like, you know, I don't know where it stems from. Like if it stems from anti-vaxxer, which is parallel to the same kind of bullshit that QAnon is spewing out there. But like, it's so fascinating. It's super interesting to see. And like to, you know, talking about this pandemic and talking about this trauma that we're all in, it's like toss the whole world into a bucket of trauma and just watch to see how how everyone handles it completely differently. Do you ever watch the show The Leftovers, the HBO series, The Leftovers?
I don't think so.
It's probably it may be one of my favorite shows I've ever watched.
Okay.
It's a fucking incredible series. There's only 3 seasons, HBO. And it's basically about this day in like October 2016 where like 6% of the population one day just vanishes into thin air.
Mm.
And so the show isn't about that happening. The show takes place like 2 years, 3 years later after this like global traumatic event. And 3 years later, you're following, the story follows like a group of people that are from a town in America where statistically there was a higher percentage of people in that town that disappeared than other places. And it's basically about how everyone has and is handling this super fucked up thing that they all went through. So like it touches on there, you know, there's a lot of themes of like religion and like, you know, existential sort of crisis thoughts, the themes of like cults are a big part of it. And yeah, it's just like, it's a fascinating show. It'd be really interesting to go back and watch it now, especially like since we're in the middle of something that is not nearly as like fucking crazy out there and horrifying, but definitely something that is like traumatic as hell and will, because we are seeing it now, back to my point, we are seeing the effects of this thing. Yeah. That is now churning out, you know, conspiracy theories have never been so. I feel like if I had said to my mom like a year ago,
Happy
hey, do you know what conspiracy theories are? My mom would be like, I don't really know what that means. And now it's just like, it's fucking everywhere. It's like my mom's a conspiracy theorist, you know, she's not, but you know what I mean? Like she fucking could be.
Yeah. Yeah, that's something that like only in the last 3 or 4 days, actually, with this, like in all this inflammation showing up in my body, I've got like, anyway, I started thinking about like, I've been thinking so much about the future and like, you know, trying to wrap my head around like, what am I going to do for money next? Like, that's always the question. But I think, you know, and I've been like writing a lot about it and thinking about what's important. And a lot of it has to do with community and collaboration. And then I started thinking about like, I'm coming up on 15 years of teaching Moto Yoga in March.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking about the studio culture that we don't really have anymore. And, just because of the pandemic and, and like both Moto International and Moto Halifax, my local studio, are like providing multi-part anti-oppression trainings. And it's just like, I'm just really feeling like I'm not proud to be a part of the wellness community at large.
Yeah,
because of this. All of that stuff.
Yeah.
And when I think about like what I know about, like know enough to like do scientific research on, like, sorry, not like as a researcher, but like if I wanted to collect information about, say, autoimmune disorders, like I would know where to look and I would know where to take information from.
Mm-hmm.
But I would never want to give the impression that I know, you know, like I am someone who knows about autoimmune disorders. It's like, no, I can look up some things and I can give you some facts and whatnot. But I really feel like there's a big presence in the wellness community there. It's like, I do this. I'm a coach of this thing. And,
oh, yeah.
And well, I can't.
I feel like that shit existed even before COVID though, too, right? But on a smaller scale, you know, it's like people.
But now I look at it too and I'm like, that's so, it's so, oppressive in a way, you know, like it doesn't take into consideration the fact that like your class isn't for everybody because it involves standing up and then getting down on the floor. There's like so many people that can't do that because of chronic pain or disability or, you know, and it's just this like you can heal like, and I believe that you can heal yourself in, you know, with the right supports, but not like just heal yourself, you know, like in that way. And it's really just a weird industry to be a part of right now, especially to like, I just don't feel like proud to, to be a part of it, but there's not a, the moto community is different, but
Yeah, no, I get what you mean. I get what you mean. Mm-hmm. There's the, like, there's almost a slight cringe to the, to the title.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Health and wellness. It's like, ugh. All right. Anyway.
Jesus Christ. I got a health and wellness podcast, for God's sakes. It's technically what it's labeled under.
Is it really? Sick Boy, it's not a comedy podcast anymore?
No. Well, they moved over to
They took us out of the comedy section as well. We're in the relationships and dating.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's interesting. I mean, you know, back to the book, The Way of the Superior Man. I'm still going to read it, and you know, It's and again, it's removed what you were saying that Matthew Remsky was touching on with this woman, but like. There is also, I'm finding, especially with this like shit with people who are subscribing to like blatant bullshit, you know, or it's whether it's conspiracy theory or whether it's like over the line, like over the line vaccine hesitancy into like anti-vax, like where it's there's people that you maybe like used to admire, like their work is like work that you really appreciate and like to, and like, you know, that you enjoy, like if it's a content creator or something like that, and then they have these views and there's that fucking, I can't even express how many times I've had to sit with this sort of like internal debate of like, okay, is this a moment where I morally feel like I can separate the artist from the art, you know, like, and that's just like a general term, but like, and I'm finding that I'm having that more and more and more these days when it comes to like, especially when it comes to stuff that's surrounding like, you know, views surrounding vaccines. It's just all about the vaccines, man. There's so many people that just don't fucking trust it.
Yeah.
It's a bit wow.
My aunt Barbara, she lives in Florida. Her and her husband are seniors. And when all of this kicked off, my aunt Barbara, it's my dad's little sister, she started a Facebook group called Coronavirus like facts and advice or something, and she every day, like maybe three times a day, she posts something to it, and most recently she posted, actually I'm just gonna look this up because I want to do it word for word, what did I say it was called? Coronavirus.
You said whatever you said, it was very on the nose. Coronavirus facts.
I just typed that into Facebook. I'm never gonna find any, there's so many pages. Okay. Anywho, she basically was like, word on the street is that the second dose has more intense side effects than the first dose. And I had never actually heard anything about side effects.
Yeah.
They're on, what do they have down there in Florida? It's Moderna, is that the name? Or is it Pfizer?
I think both have been shipped out. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I totally get it. When I read that, I was like, oh, I don't want to be like, I don't want to feel that, but I mean, obviously the alternative is worse, but I've never had that from a vaccine before. I've never had like,
but flu-like symptoms. But that's also a statement that's such a general broad stroke of a brush.
Mm.
Not everyone experiences side effects.
Okay.
Typically side effects are rare, you know, like more often than not, most people are going to get it and either feel pain in the arm or feel like blasé for a day or two.
Right.
That's it.
I got a question for you.
Sure.
Maybe you guys have talked about this on Sick Boy, but I know that there's recently been some study on depression and inflammation.
Yeah.
And that really leads my brain to believe what came first, the depression or the inflammation, because I don't know if it's there, if it's present in all types of depression, but I'm wondering if I'm experiencing a totally inflammatory response all over my body, mm-hmm. which seems to be happening. What was I saying? I totally lost my
You were talking about depression being linked to
so
inflammation.
Yeah, I guess. And I have a meltdown yesterday, even though I had sort of feeling like I was okay. Could inflammation be causing me to behave depressed even if I don't feel sad? Do you know what I mean? Emotionally. Could I have physical symptoms of depression, inflammation of the brain, without feeling emotionally depressed?
That's a good question. I don't really know.
Okay.
I'm not sure. I mean, you really are asking the worst human possible for any, I don't remember the last thing I fucking talked about. I don't remember how we started this podcast. I have no room for any memories.
Also a sign of inflammation.
Yeah. Oh, there's a lot of inflammation going up in this head. Trust me. but here's a little interesting study. This is a very non-traditional turn me on podcast here. You'll find this kind of interesting. It's sort of in line with what you're talking about. Psilocybin, all right? So magic mushrooms produces an immunology related genetic response in the prefrontal cortex of pig brains. Okay, so we talked about this on Sick Boy the other day. This is just a giant ad for Sick Boy, everyone. psilocybin does not appear to severely impact gene expression, according to a new study in European neuropsychopharmacology. But the psychedelic substance, which is found in magic mushrooms, might produce lasting changes to the expression of a few immune-related genes in the brain. They go in to talk about the pigs that were studied, and that there were pigs that got the psilocybin injected and pigs that got just an inert saline injection. Then they euthanized the pigs a day after administration, while some of them were euthanized a week later, and then they studied the brains afterwards. An analysis of prefrontal cortex tissue revealed that 19 genes were differentially expressed one day after psilocybin administration, but only 3 genes were differentially expressed in the brain tissue 1 week later. So I think they were going into this going, this gene expression, how much difference is there in the gene expression over a longer period of time? Is it a lot? Is it a little? Turns out it's a little. This observation was unexpected, given the profound and lasting effects that have been observed after a single dose of psilocybin, the researcher said. So they were expecting it to be more, but it was less. Knudsen, who is one of the scientists behind the study, told SciPost that there were surprisingly few changes to be observed in the brain 24 hours and 7 days after a single dose of psilocybin. Immune-related genes constituted the largest... This is where it gets kind of interesting, though. So immune-related genes constituted the largest group of genes impacted 1 week after psilocybin administration, suggesting that the long-lasting effects of the psychedelic substance might be related to neuroinflammation. Neuroinflammation, this is a quote, neuroinflammation is now recognized as a key player in psychiatric diseases such as depression, with positive outcomes of treatment with anti-inflammatory compounds. Scientists proposed in 2018 that psychedelic substances act as anti-inflammatory agents via the activation of the serotonin 2A receptor, which is known to play a key role in regulating immune function. But there's currently very little research establishing a link between psychedelic drugs and neuroinflammation. So basically, all of that is to say that this little study, which there's so much more that has to go into it, right? This is one study, a very small study. It's not enough to say anything except that there might be a link between psilocybin and reducing neuroinflammation in particular in a way that reduces signs or symptoms of depression. Hi, Vonnegut. Hi, buddy. For the listeners, our cat has just appeared on the screen. And if you want to see what Vonnegut looks like, you can go to patreon.com/turnmeon and watch our foreplays. Hey, bud. Oh, you're so cute.
You have a noise you'd like to make? He's usually very vocal.
I heard him.
He's
going to
cry now.
Yeah.
Oh, you did? Yeah, he's been very vocal lately. I put him on a diet. He doesn't like that.
So anyway, yeah, there's some neuroinflammation facts for you.
It's very interesting.
Yeah.
It's very interesting. Well,
maybe you should try. Maybe you should
take some psilocybin.
Maybe you should do a little dose.
I have some over there.
Dose up. Don't say that.
Yeah, maybe.
Don't say that on the podcast. Allegedly, folks. She allegedly has some over there.
Oh, man. Maybe. God. Yeah.
Maybe.
Neuroscience is so cool.
Isn't it? Hey, you know what else is so fucking cool? What our guest this week has to say to us, Charlotte is a speech language pathologist. This is like, there's a lot of pseudoscience and real science, in this episode. We talked to Charlotte about her work as a, speech language pathologist, but in a really interesting way. Charlotte has a private practice, called Through Speech, where she is basically surrounding her focus on helping folks who are on the autism spectrum or who have experienced traumatic brain injuries or who have intellectual disabilities, and giving them a space to learn how to work on their intimate communication, which is, as one might expect, a bit of a struggle for some people who live with those conditions. And so it was a really fascinating conversation about communication and the ways that we innately communicate versus the ways that some people don't necessarily innately communicate. But it's funny because when we talked to her, there was things where I was going, I feel like I could use a little sit down with you to tell me how I can be a better communicator in my intimate relationships.
The scope of when she was telling us the scope of a speech pathologist's job,
it's crazy.
Like everything from like body language to personal space to like understanding how communication works back and forth, like a conversation.
Yeah.
It's just like, it's really impressive. Like that's a lot of skills to cram into one approach,
human brain.
You know? Yeah, exactly. I loved this conversation. I was so excited about it. And,
yeah, you were giddy. Yeah. So we hope you enjoyed it as much as we did. And of course we will be back on the other side, but if you're just watching here on Patreon, that's great. We love you. And,
that's it. I'll leave you with my Gold Star.
Doesn't look too bad.
Casey, yeah.
Doesn't look too bad there.
No.
No. All right. Well, we will see you on the other side. I think I want to start this off, first of all, by saying I'm excited about this conversation because even though I don't know a whole lot about what we're doing, mostly because Bridey does everything in the back end and I just kind of show up when I'm told, I feel like what we're about to talk about is something that could easily be explored on this podcast, Turn Me On, but also kind of falls into the realm of stuff that we talk about on my other podcast, Sick Boy.
Well, I just like, I'm so excited for this conversation because of of like all of our vocal training.
Right. You know, time like, to shine.
I'm kind of career interviewing you right now. Like I might go to school. I might go back to school and study the stuff that you know.
And yeah, so, I have an undergrad in linguistics. So I learned a lot about things that you would never ever think about, such as why sentences are placed or words are organized in the way they are. And it is insanely complicated. Like you would never, perhaps you would never think that it would be, but yeah, it was wild. It's very like meta.
May I ask if linguists is a specific, like, are you studying language as a whole? Or are you just studying the English language?
No, languages as a whole. So often, like for exams and things, we would get a language we did not speak. So, you know, perhaps even like a dialect of a language that involves like different sounds that aren't in the English language. Like a good example would be like in German, they have a lot of like types of noises. Yeah. We don't have that. So we would, it gets very complicated and I know it like might be a bit boring, but we do use like what's called the International Phonetic Alphabet, and we translate everything from like words into their sounds. So technically, we could read any language if it was in the International Phonetic Alphabet, but we didn't know what it means.
This is Amy Adams's job in Arrival. She
was
a linguist.
Yeah, right.
Remember?
Oh, yeah. Arrival.
Oh, that's the alien one, right? I haven't seen it, but I should. I know I should.
You should.
Even if you are not a sci-fi fan, it's a spectacular film. Right. I totally forgot about that. What a fucking badass character she was.
Right.
So, go ahead, Brad.
Well, yeah. So you're a linguist. You studied linguistics.
Well, yeah, I am a linguist, I suppose. My undergrad was in a Bachelor of Science in Linguistics. And then I've done my master's in Communication Sciences and Disorders. So speech language pathology. So now I'm a speech pathologist.
A speech pathologist, which for someone who's never heard of that job before, what's the day in the life of a speech pathologist?
See, the thing is our practice is so like our scope of practice is just so large that I would say if someone hears I'm a speech pathologist, they typically like the first thing that they kind of relate that to is stutters and like lisps and fixing like R sounds. So that's kind of the typical like, you know, you're a speech pathologist. This is what you do. But our practice is just insanely large. So I work in right now, in addition to like my private practice, I actually work in pediatric feeding and swallowing. So because we know like this, the old head to the neck anatomy pretty well, we are in charge of the feeding and swallowing.
So like, I want a lot of babies. Any kind of like, yeah, right. Any kind of issues with swallowing or.
Yep, exactly. Right, so like right now, if a baby was born premature, let's say, or they had some sort of diagnoses and they were unable to orally eat, or they were having a hard time kind of getting that established, and they were also being tube fed at the same time, we kind of work from getting them tube fed to orally fed.
So what's the relationship between swallowing and vocalizing?
It's all like, so basically like it's all located in like the pharyngeal area of your neck. So, or of your throat. So like the larynx, which is like right here. We know like the anatomy and the physiology of, the swallow as it relates to the larynx, and then the larynx houses the vocal folds. So then it's all kind of like in the same area. And I mean, if you aspirate, which is probably you have done that before, I do it. If you're like talking and drinking and then coughing, that kind of thing, then probably liquid has gone down into your airway. Mm-hmm. And then you like cough and your eyes water and, you know.
Why are we designed that way?
I know, right? It is poor planning. Because it is like, it's like this. It's like stomach. Lungs.
Right. To
good,
like a,
yeah, very bad.
Yeah. A fork in the road. And if you, if
don't
if,
choose the
if
wrong
whatever's
one.
Going down, chooses the wrong one, then you're, yeah, you're fucked for a moment.
Yeah. What drew you to linguistics and speech pathology?
So it's very, so this like, is that, that's a great question because it kind of gets into why I wanted to start through speech in the first place. I went to university and I knew I wanted to get a job or go into a field that I would get a job in. Because like growing up, I just knew that I kind of wanted a job where I would, you know, go to work, come home, get my paycheck, do my thing, and not have to worry about like trying to be employed. And in hindsight, now that I'm looking back, like it totally makes sense that I went into this field because I have thought about words, communication, language for so long. Like since I was like, I remember one of my earliest thoughts about language and like words was like, why is ketchup named ketchup? Where did that come from? Like what's with that? You know? So, it's like, why did someone decide that this is a water, like a bottle, like how did they create those sounds, you know, like to create this word? So anyway, but I did my undergrad. I like totally busted my butt to get into grad school, which is like, you know, when I applied, it was like a 30% acceptance rate in Canada. It was just insane. So people are going like all over the world to get their master's in speech pathology. I went to the University of Alberta. So I'm in Vancouver. I'm on Vancouver Island now, but I just moved back here from Edmonton. But anyway, it's like, I do love my job. Like it's a job. It's great, you know, like my day-to-day job kind of thing. But I think it's when people are going to university, you kind of have this idea in your mind where it's like, all I have to do is graduate and then life is going to be perfect. I'm going to be so happy and I'm going to love my job.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a lie. It's kind of a lie. So
they sell it hard. They sell it hard.
And like, yeah, I think about it a lot. I'm like, wow, I was so stressed out trying to get into grad school. I was like a crazy like studier and just worrier, and it was just not a good time. But and now I'm on the other side. I'm like, that was interesting. I really went hard into that, and not that it's not worth it. Like I, you know, it is a great job, but I don't know. It's just wild. So anyway, I wanted to, you know, I was thinking about like what I like to do and what I like to talk about. And, you know, a lot of that is I love to talk about relationships and dating. That's like one of my favorite things to talk about. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to figure out how I could somehow incorporate that into my current job. So my current profession as a speech pathologist, I should say. So what kind of got that idea or what kind of helped that idea come to fruition was that I listened to Sick Boy a lot. I listened to Turn Me On a lot, and you guys would interview some people and I'd be like, man, that they would really benefit from some like explicit teaching and dating, because even like I listened to Dan Savage a lot and people will call in and say like, you know, my partner isn't doing what I want. And then in whatever way. And then Dan will often say like, well, did you use your words? And it's like, well, no, they're just supposed to guess what I want. And like, I do that sometimes where like with my partner, I'm like, you didn't read my mind. Like, how dare you?
That happens,
you know?
So much.
But also,
and
doesn't
it's
it not
infuriating?
Totally.
When is that happening? And when is it just like you miss, you're just speaking different languages? Like, not to perpetuate the men are from Mars, women are from Venus thing.
Right.
But like, there with language, one of the trickiest parts of it is that we walk around the world assuming that we share the same definition of words as everyone else.
Totally.
And then if you live with a dictionary on your desk, like I do, I'm like, oh, I've been using that word completely inappropriately. but like it could be just, you know, I have a different relationship to the word upsetting or whatever.
Right.
So
right.
Communication.
And that is tricky. And like, I guess finding a common ground where it's like mutually understood what these words mean is kind of the best way to go about it. But even like before that, I find that a lot of like just anyone will struggle even to get any words out to say like, this is how I'm feeling, or you're not fulfilling me in this way. And sometimes we don't have the language for it. Sometimes we don't have like the vocabulary for it. And I think that, you know, a lot of the strategies that I use with my clients, I do think that most people would benefit from, because I try to, I mean, I'll work with anyone, but, it's mostly those with like either social communication challenges or challenges from with language from like a traumatic brain injury, stroke, things like this. So, yeah.
So this is part of your private practice.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of mentioned it earlier through speech. Is that the name of the practice itself?
Yeah. So I kind of like my slogan. Was, which I haven't really said, but the reason I wanted through speech was because we're kind of facilitating relationships and intimacy through speech. So it's, right. You know, using communication to achieve these goals.
Right.
And some people just need more explicit kind of teaching on how to use our words, but also how to read other people. So how to read other people's body language and their tone of voice and their eye gaze. What are they looking at? Like these types of things where it can give you like other clues that you and I probably do it automatically. You probably don't really think of it, where some people, they don't, that's not really like innate to them. And the interesting thing is like, how do we learn that? How do we learn that if I'm like sitting back here with my arms crossed and like, looking off to the side, I'm probably not interested, you know, like in our conversation.
Turn Me On Podcast. We'll be back after this short break.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So I find this really fascinating because there's, first of all, I feel like this is the first time that I've ever heard of someone whose job it is to teach a population of people the skills required to have intimate conversations within their relationships. I think it's like, so important and valuable for a group of the a subsect of the population who are innately going to be challenged by those scenarios, like you just said. Mm-hmm. But I also think it's like super fucking important that like everybody else in the population also has like an avenue to learn how to have intimate conversations, because I feel like it's like we were kind of just touching on it earlier. We all have problems with it. But then add on top of that, someone who is on the autism spectrum, then you've got this entire other layer that you're that you're facing with struggling with that. But one of the things that I'm kind of curious about is like how. So I understand that you are teaching skills, maybe things that would be innate to me, but maybe not someone who is autistic. But how much does, because when I think about like teaching communication on how to be intimate, or you know, teaching the like the skill of love or the language of love, I think about therapy. I'm like, oh, that, like that's like a that seems like a therapist's job. So like how much of the work that you do, like do you skirt this fine line between like therapy and language? I don't even know.
Totally. I know what you're saying. So a lot of my referrals come from psychologists, actually. So there is like this underlying psychological component that these people have reached out to a psychologist, possibly like a sex and relationship psychologist, to deal with like their underlying kind of psychological concerns. And then what I've found is that a psychologist will kind of be like, I am lost with this person. I have done all of the therapy to address any sort of underlying psychological concern, and they're still not able to get what they want. So, and we've kind of, we've come to the conclusion that it's that their ability to communicate what they want, so actually like verbally or otherwise say what they want, has been, is kind of the, what's lacking. So it's not that like mentally there's something going on. It's that, I mean, there is of course like a mental component to what I'm doing as well, but, we have identified that this, the concern is not psychologic in nature. We've determined, or we've come to that conclusion, that it's more so like, I don't know how to read this person's body language, or I don't know what they mean when they say, what are you doing tonight? Well, I just, what am I doing? I'm going home. I'm reading a book. I'm being by myself. Where it's like, if I was, you know, if I'm interested in someone, I'd be like, what are you doing tonight? Is means that I want to see, I want to hang out with you, you know, but that's not what that mean.
Says
that's all that says. That's exactly what,
yeah right
so
yeah.
So that's kind of where we where I come in, and like an example that I have from someone that I've worked with was a middle-aged guy who had a performance review at work, and at work they told him that you know, there's been some feedback from your coworkers that are saying that you're kind of rude, and you're, you know, telling them they're not doing their job right, and that, you know, you think you could do a better job. And you know, this client was like devastated. He was, I had no idea that I was like coming across that way. I didn't, you know, I'm just like telling it how it is. Where, you know, perhaps a large majority of people would kind of be able to reflect about what they've said, think about how they said it, and then think like, oh, maybe I shouldn't have said it that way. But if you don't even have that awareness to like realize that you're doing that,
where do you start?
Then that's tough. So that would be a place where I would be helpful to actually talk about, like, we're going to talk about your tone of voice, we're going to talk about your body language, we're going to talk about your eye contact, and like all these other social communication aspects.
It's so interesting, because it, like, I mean, we were talking about briefly for a moment, like our work in performance, going to performance school, Bridie, you and I, and like voice work and all that stuff. But there's also, you know, one of the big things that we were taught while doing all this work with our voice was also like how to interpret the subtext within the, you know, within the scripts that we are working with.
Totally.
And what a fucking challenging aspect of like the, of being an actor to like read into subtext, text that isn't there, and to interpret it and to make meaning of it. And it's like, there's a lot of, I feel silly for like equating a lot of what these people are trying to learn through your work to what an actor is trying to learn in order to like portray something on the stage. But there are a lot of like the parallels there, you know. It's a
totally, and like to a degree, I don't know, I'm thinking of this like on the fly, but like to a degree, are we acting?
Yeah, like, well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, absolutely, especially when you think about when it comes to dating, right? And communicating exactly. through dating. It's like when you go on a first date and you really like that this person, or like you feel like, oh, there's sparks here. Are you truly your most authentic self in that moment?
I don't think so. I mean, I'm not.
I don't think so. I think we're trying to portray this mm-hmm. version of ourselves mm-hmm. to like really make sure that we don't fuck this up.
That's why you don't marry. Yeah, exactly. That's why you don't marry someone after your like your first date.
Yeah, yeah.
Otherwise,
exactly.
that would be like
yeah.
a poor choice, you know, because you got to like get to know someone.
I yeah. feel like I know someone who does that. I feel like I know someone who's been engaged so many times because of that impulse. But
and yeah, it feels good to be connected with someone, and it feels good to like feel wanted and these kinds of things. Mm. And like to be honest with you, when I am a married gal now, but before I was married and before I was with my partner, I had a really, really hard time dating. Mm. It was really tricky because I found that like I was kind of like, no, I want to say how I feel, but then I also want to be cool. And I also don't want to be too forward, but kind of forward, but also have to read what they're saying. It's just, it's very complicated.
So that what you just said right there, that complication for someone like yourself, because that is obviously that those complications, which we all can relate to, we all mm-hmm. know very well. How much does that complicate the work that you are trying to do, which is to teach someone who already has an issue with reading the subtext throughout their day to day, and then on top of that add the complexity of like of, you know, courting other people or navigating relationship issues? Like how fucking tough is
it? Is so tough. And like the only way to really become better at it is to practice, just like right. you guys were saying with podcasting. It's like, you know, you're not nervous anymore, so but you had to do it in order to be not nervous anymore. And I think you know, a lot of the challenges that one might face will I think get better with time. But I mean, there are like within like the social communication aspect of like speech pathology, there are like principles and strategies and like different kinds of layers, I guess you could say, to like to teaching someone these things. So first of all, we're going to think about like perspective taking. So we're going to think about how other people think, because communication can only be like successful if we both have relatively the same thought.
Right.
Like, you know, if I'm talking about one thing and you're talking about the other thing, like we are not communicating very well. So we first need to make sure that we're on the same page. So we need to think about like how we can be on the same page. Well, we could go, you know, talk about a mutually enjoyable topic. Like we could go, you know, if you're interested in museums, we'll go to a museum and hopefully that will be helpful in trying to get us like on the same page. But then, yeah, we have to learn to like take the perspective of others, which like involves thinking about your own thoughts and thinking about how your own thoughts make you feel and then kind of projecting that or like using that to help you understand how others might feel. So that's kind of like the first thing that we talk about, how your thoughts and your feelings interact and how others' thoughts and feelings may interact. And then we talk about like your social, your proximity to people. Like, you know, you're not like super close and you're not like way far away, you know, and sometimes people need to be taught that more explicitly. And, you know, even your stance, like how you're standing, what is like an open way to communicate with someone, what is not an open way. And you guys probably know a lot about that. Like, I mean, I'm assuming it's like some part of acting is your body.
A huge part.
Yeah.
I mean, that's your tool. That's the tool right. that you use to convey the message that you're trying to convey.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And with acting, it's about embodiment too. So something that really interests me about working on the voice, and I'm really curious about whether you've experienced any of this personally through studying it, like in your own voice, is to be able to say what you want or how you're feeling. You actually also need to be able to feel it and feel what and feel desire and feel want. And a lot of the work that we did in acting school was about becoming aware of your bodily sensations and where you hold tension and where you feel tension, what prevents you from communicating from in a fully embodied person what
totally
you want and what you feel. So what, yeah, I'm just curious.
Yeah. And I think that voice. What was I going to say? Something about, the dating. I mean, I don't remember, but, even some of these kind of principles that don't necessarily have to be around dating. They could just be like around friendship and things like this, which is like often in people who with speech pathologists who work with children, we teach these strategies and these kind of principles like very young. But some people didn't get that. You know, if let's say someone does have a diagnosis of autism and they got it later on in life, they might have not had those supports or they just didn't have access to them when they were younger. But those are like very early, early taught skills in people who have challenges with that. But, and Bridie, I don't even think I answered your question, but,
I'm eating up everything you're saying.
Okay. Another example of someone that I had, which wasn't necessarily exactly dating. It was more just like social communication. And then in the context of dating, because what the issue is right now is that you can go to a speech pathologist and have therapy that addresses like how to get your needs and wants met in social communication, but it's not focused around like intimacy and dating. And the reason that I wanted to kind of be more niche in that area, I suppose you could say, is because I think that as a speech pathologist myself, if I was not working in an area that was explicitly meant for dating and intimacy, I don't know if I would bring it up if I had a client. I don't know if I'd be like, how's your dating life? Are you getting your needs and wants met? Like, I'd probably just be like, can you ask for a coffee at the coffee shop?
Is that because it seems kind of secondary to what the the more prominent issues would
totally.
Be like basically just getting through day to day.
Exactly.
Life?
Yeah, exactly. Right. And so it's like, you know, in most speech pathology models, once we've helped someone gain skills in getting their needs and wants met, it's done. Like therapy is done. So, right. So I wanted to bring in like my, interest in dating and to go back to my story before, I found dating really hard, but I did it a lot. I did a lot of dating. So I got better at it. So, and I think for me, it was when I was struggling with it, I grew up in Victoria. And I don't know if you guys know much about Victoria, but it's about like a 3-to-1 ratio of women to men.
Whoa, so, I didn't know that. That's wild.
Crazy. So like any men who are like looking for some partners, like come on down. There's women for days. So so that was kind of part of the problem was like, yeah, I mean, I love Victoria. And like, if anyone is listening from Victoria, I'm sorry. But like sometimes the men are kind of like sucky. Like a little bit sucky sometimes.
It sounds like that small town issue. But even though Victoria is like not,
I think it's similar to like Halifax. It's like in terms of its size. But but anyway, so I did it a lot. I got better at kind of realizing like what is good to say and what's not good to say. But then I came to a point where I was like, I don't know, like maybe I should just say what I want and see what happens. And I did. And it worked pretty well, because it's like a great way to say like, this is what I want. Do you want that? No, bye. Cause like, not like that, kind of blunt, I suppose. But the reason I had brought that up is because I saw a client recently who had a brain injury and he did not know how to take turns in conversation following this brain injury. Okay. So he would just talk and talk and talk and talk and talk and talk and not never stop. And so I would have to say like, you know, in a conversation, you have to let me talk to you. You have to ask me a question. You can't just like make a statement and just like hope that I relate to it or that I'm going to say something and try to interrupt you. You know, you should be asking me questions too.
Right.
And not just talk about something that you're interested in. Like, you know, I like to draw. I could talk about drawing all the time, but, you know, maybe the person I'm talking to doesn't care about drawing. And I have to realize that this person maybe doesn't like drawing because I haven't asked them. So maybe I just haven't asked them. I don't know. Or maybe they're like totally disengaged from the conversation. And yet I'm still just like, and I like to draw this and that and the other. And I use this and this. And like, so with this client, it wasn't necessarily with dating, even though it is very important for dating. It was more like, let's set the groundwork. Let's get you with that awareness that you should be asking questions and pausing.
Yeah.
And right. Then we'll go from there.
Sounds like I've had a traumatic brain injury.
Yes.
I find this really, really interesting that you like the sort of spectrum of patients that you work with. So people who are on the autism spectrum, people who have intellectual disabilities, people who have traumatic brain injury. How much does the approach that you work with change based off of the type of patient that you're seeing, right? Like with this patient who had the traumatic brain injury, you know, is your approach with someone like that a lot different than perhaps someone who comes in who's autistic?
It's a really good question. And I initially said yes, but then now I'm thinking like perhaps no, because for him in particular, you know, I did have to get him to think about like my thoughts and think about like my perspective and think about how, you know, if I were to do that to him, like how would that feel if I was just like, and then, just talking about whatever that doesn't apply to him. And like, that doesn't allow you to connect with your partner. That doesn't allow you to connect with coworkers or friends or anything. And like, sometimes that's challenging to know what is the line there. And, you know, what is inappropriate? It's very, I think there's some hard rules in that, but I also think there's some very subtle rules. Like, and within that is communication. You have to communicate what your boundaries are. You have to communicate what your preferences are. And it all comes down to like your ability to communicate. So if you already have a hard time with that, it's going to be even that much harder, you know? So maybe not that different, but also it is like very much like case by case, of course, but maybe not that different.
Yeah. Yeah. I suppose it's less about what they're coming in, what their diagnosis is of what they're coming in with, but more so about what the diagnosis is there. So it's like, you're not focusing on that. You're focusing on the issue at hand or whatever it is that they're struggling with. Yeah. Right.
Exactly. Cause I don't need someone does not need to have a diagnosis to see me. Like they can just be like, just living their life.
Yeah.
That's so wonderful. You know what kind of blew my mind, and it's kind of coming together now. Now I'm understanding why, but I just recently got health insurance and I was like, oh, interesting that speech pathology's on here. Like seems like there wouldn't, like, I can't imagine how there would be such a huge, there's not that many people walking around with a lisp or unable to swallow that I know of. So,
totally.
Now I get it. Now I totally get it.
And I think it's tough too, because like, there aren't even that many of us in comparison to like physiotherapists. Like everyone knows what a physio is.
Yeah.
You know, and for us, like we trained in the same building as the physiotherapists and the occupational therapists. Like we were all together kind of thing. But I don't know. Like it's not like you sprain your ankle and you need speech therapy.
Yeah.
You know, we're like any person can go to physio. And so that's and that's a realization that I had after I got my job. I was like, it's not just like your average person kind of coming in. Like there's a reason that they're typically coming in, like whether it is like congenital or acquired or whatever. And like, yeah, so that was an interesting discovery on my own part, which I really should have realized like a lot sooner, but sometimes you don't until you're in it.
Would you work with couples?
Yeah.
See, I totally would. I totally would. And it's funny because sometimes I find that like I'm so focused on communication all the time, like just in my everyday life, that I'm like, my poor husband, like he has to deal with like me all the time. Just like, we're doing long distance right now. And I had a very like speech pathologist, not argument, but like a bicker with him. I was like, when we talk on the phone, I cannot see your facial expressions and I cannot see what you're looking at. So if you take longer than 3 seconds to answer my questions, then it's no good. Cause I'm like, hello, are you there? Like, what's happening? So, yeah, but I would totally do that, because if someone was, you know, if like the communication is just not getting through to each other because like perhaps your partner doesn't know, like I find that sometimes it's just hard to talk about like our feelings and it's hard to talk about what we want, but we have to kind of be able to talk for, or like to say things in other, in any way that you might say something, whether it's spoken or otherwise. That's kind of like, you have to have these types of things, or even just like for your partner to recognize your body language or recognize your, like how you respond to things. And even like, think of intimate moments as well. Like, you know, if someone is like, if someone isn't able to read your body cues, like in the bedroom, it's not going to be very good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and so like even like attention, like you have to be sensitive enough to realize that like attention is there, or like a facial change is there, you know?
Yeah.
How much of, do you ever work with people who like struggle with like post-traumatic stress disorder?
That's interesting.
Like I know that a lot of people who have PTSD kind of have maybe I'm speaking at a school at a turn here, and I don't really know exactly what I'm talking about, but
that's okay.
but I feel like some people with PTSD have struggles with whether it's like reading the situation properly, or you know, certain things triggering them. Does that like fall into your realm at all, or is that kind of like a completely separate,
yeah, I'm not sure, job, to be honest with you. I feel like in those cases, it would probably and more so involve a psychologist.
Yeah.
I think. Mm-hmm. But that's why like I really value this, my psychology colleagues, so that I can kind of like, we can chat about things back and forth to say like, this seems out of my scope. This would maybe be something more so that you could address. And I think, you know, psychologists probably do address some things that I talk about, but maybe they don't really realize that there's like actual therapy guidelines for this type of thing. Like it's not, right, you know, people talk about it like all the time without actually probably even realizing that they're talking about like, that they're, yeah, talking about like social communication stuff. And like sometimes, you know, an example might be that if you're like, oh, do you want to go to the bar or something? And I was like, sure. Then you wouldn't be like, let's go, you know, sound pump about it. It'd be like, oh, like you don't seem like you want to go. Like, what's going on? And like to be able to kind of recognize that.
Right, right.
You know?
That's why I fucking hate texting with people.
Yep.
Because
yep.
It, like I love using the word sure. I use it a lot, and I use it
problematic.
I know, it's so problematic, because usually I'm like, yeah, sure, sure. Like to me, the word sure is like,
sure,
yes, it's yes. Yeah, like I use it exactly as it's meant to be used. But if you just write sure in a text, that's the fucking response every single time. It's like, what's wrong?
Right.
What do you mean? I just said, sure, I'll meet you there.
Or sometimes, you know, someone might have the opposite problem where like they're totally good over text. And even like with dating apps, like think of that, like a dating app, you might like be like clicking, doing great over a dating app. And then like some of the clients I see, then they go in person and they're like, I don't have this time to formulate this phrase. I don't have this time to like think about what I'm going to say and add the exclamation mark and put the smiley face in, when really you're just on the other line. Like, you know, you're not like, maybe sometimes you are.
I am.
You
ain't like, I write like that. Yeah. I write with expressing every emotion on my face. I think Jeremy, you've caught me on that a handful of times.
Yeah, I see it all the time. You're just,
Todd will walk in the room and be like, who are you texting with that big smile on your face?
And that's great. But like, you know, if you're like, yeah, if it's like those things that you can see on the internet these days where it's like someone typing and it's like, no worries, ! And then it's like, it actually caused a lot of worries. Like, you know, you say something that you like, isn't actually like in person how you're actually feeling, but
a great acting exercise, actually. Say your line, but meaning the opposite.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like even recently I saw a patient who had a stroke and he had a hard time putting like intonation in his own voice. So it was like confusing. You're like, are you asking me a question or are you making a statement? Like, that's confusing. So like he required that explicit teaching. Like when you ask a question, typically your voice goes up at the end.
Like, I remember learning that.
Do you tend to see more people in specifically within the work that you do surrounding like navigating intimate relationships? Do you tend to see more people who are single or more people who are already within a relationship?
Single for sure. Yeah, single for sure. But like this one, I mean, I guess it's like a different situation if you had like a traumatic brain injury or like an acquired communication impairment versus like not, because maybe you're like older in life, if you've had like a stroke or something like this, and perhaps you've like established this communication already like 4 years before then. And it's actually quite like devastating seeing these people, because if I were to just lose my ability to speak, and like if you, I don't know if you guys know about like aphasia,
I've heard.
We talked about aphasia on Sickway.
Oh yeah, 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 yeah. So, so you know, like your sudden loss of language is horrible. Like I could not imagine. So, you know, you can't get your needs and wants met, even just like, I want this and that or whatever for dinner. But like, you're for sure not getting your intimate needs and wants met. Like, I can tell you that much. I mean, like if you haven't had like direct therapy and, you know, I feel like I said before, the therapy that they probably would get would not address that, you know, like, cause like certain therapy techniques in the world of aphasia, sometimes works off of like creating a phrase and repeating the phrase over and over and over again until it becomes more automatic in your speech. Right. So, you know, I can't imagine that the speech pathology, and maybe like, I think I've tried to look all over the internet to see if there's someone else that offers a service like mine and I can't find it. I did watch that show on Netflix, Love on the Spectrum, which was like, I saw it and I was like, girlfriend, I see that. Like, we're doing kind of a similar thing. She's not a speech pathologist, but I think she's a psychologist. But she's doing like the exact same thing that I do.
Okay.
Mm. Yeah. But anyway, I had a thought and I lost my thought.
Where can people? I mean, so through speech, where can people find like the work that you do? And is this something that, you know, is this something that your work is servicing like nationwide, or is it limited to British Columbia? Like tell us about that.
So unfortunately you have to be regulated by the college that you are practicing in order to practice. So I am registered to practice in both Alberta and BC. So I have two colleges that I am a member of. But yeah, that's the hard thing. It's like, I can't find another speech pathologist that does something like this in, you know, Eastern Canada, in anywhere. And I can't, like, I can put things on my website and like offer kind of like these free resources that someone might want. And I am slowly chipping away at that website. Yeah, I can only practice in these two provinces. So yeah, it's too bad, because I'm looking right now at doing like some free education sessions with some other people in Victoria to offer to people here. But I mean, I don't know when it comes to like offering a Zoom of some sort, like a Zoom, not a Zoom like therapy where you're asking for, maybe like the money part complicates things. I don't really know, but I wonder like if anyone could tune into something like that, because then that would be wonderful. But there has to be kind of more than just me doing it. And it's interesting, like when you start something new, it's like you get it like some flack for sure, you know, like, oh, that's not like that's dumb, like you're not gonna get very many people that are interested in that. And like right now there's only me, so you know, I don't even think people know to look, and so mostly it's been word of mouth and the psychologist that I've like connected with, that I've said like, hey, this is a service that I offer, but I don't think that people know even to look. So that's been like the challenge right now is right. is that I mean, starting a business in 2020 was like a questionable decision, yeah, but, right? Like no one is dating, but yeah, yeah. But I've managed to still like come through with some patience, but yeah, so it would be nice if there were other SLPs like me that could that we could, you know, try and reach a larger amount of people, because unless you live in Alberta or BC, I can't provide treatment.
I could see you putting out a video series, you know, especially with your long distance relationship training on
be quicker to answer my message.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. But like, you know, in this virtual world where we're communicating through screens all the time.
Totally.
Like, you know, maybe that's a really helpful. There's a real niche. Probably,
yeah. But. Well, you know, we have a bunch of people out there listening to this conversation right now, which is really fun to know that.
Yeah.
And definitely some people who live in the BC and Alberta area.
Mm-hmm.
For those folks who might who live out there and might require some of your services or know someone who might benefit from it, what's the website and how can they find you?
So my website is just www, World Wide Web, throughspeech.com, throughspeech.com. And then my email is throughspeech@gmail.com. And then my Instagram is throughspeechslp. So I have like three different ways to access me.
Awesome.
I have one last hard-hitting question.
I know, I'm sad that it's almost done. I have so many more things to say. Look at this big piece of paper.
Well, is it
useless?
Well, okay, before kidding. I get to my hard-hitting question, do you have anything on there that you feel like we gotta address? Because we're not locked into a time frame.
No, I know. I feel like I could talk about this forever. So me unless too. You have forever. You can be okay.
It's not long enough. My hard-hitting question then is, as a professional communication teacher who practices teaching communication to other people, where or what in your life do you have to work hard to communicate well at? What's hard for you to communicate?
I think things that are hard for me to communicate is anything that would possibly hurt someone's feelings. I have a really hard time with that. Like I am really bad at it. So like in my dating days, it was not very good. Like, because if I wasn't interested in someone that was interested in me, I had a really hard time being like, nah, like, I just don't think that we're compatible. Because I hate, it like pains me to think that someone could be sad because of something I did. So that's where I struggle. And I think, you know, it's totally normal to have like areas of strength and area of weakness. And basically like in the clients that I see, we just talk about like, what is challenging for you? Like maybe their goal is not to do something that perhaps would be like a more obvious, or like, oh, you don't want to address this issue that like seems to be a big problem, and they want to do something different. Well, that's totally fine. Like, we can work wherever they're kind of at. Mm-hmm. And I'll even see someone like with an articulation concern, because lots of times like it can be embarrassing. Maybe it is embarrassing to the person who has it, but like you can feel self-conscious if you are an adult and you have apraxia, which I remember there was an apraxia episode on Sick Boy. Like you do sound different.
Can you explain that for our listeners who haven't heard?
Jeezy wheezy. Well, okay. So it's like, it is challenges with like moving your mouth and your articulators in a way that allows for speech to come out in predictable ways. So their speech sounds very different because their vowels sound very different. So it's I don't know if that made sense, but basically like their ability to message from here to the mouth, like from the brain to the mouth, it just kind of gets like a bit interrupted. So instead of always saying like a vowel, like an ah vowel, it might be sometimes like an all vowel or an il vowel or something like this, where it's just, it's hard to control. So, so they can sound really, they almost, it sometimes can sound as though you like are hard of hearing. I don't know if that is helpful at all, but that way of speaking, it sounds a little bit like that. I think that's the best comparison that I could give. So, or someone who does, like, maybe there is someone who's older who has a stutter and they, it's really, and everything else is totally fine, but their ability to connect with someone else is totally impacted by their stutter. So let's fix that so that you can actually like be romantic and not worry like, am I going to stutter? Like that kind of thing.
Yeah. I would have thought that there would be examples as well of people who are like, anytime I go to ask for what I want or say what I want, my throat closes. Like that totally. I hear all the time.
And totally.
Is that like, how do you even begin to address that? Is it relaxation and mindfulness?
It's a lot of relaxation and a lot of like breathing techniques. Like there's, I hope I get this right, but there's this one diagnosis called spasmodic dysphonia. I think that's what it is. I'm like really reaching back to my grad school times, where like you just feel like you can't like breathe. And instead of like taking a big breath, like because your vocal cords like close, we get them to sniff instead. And then that makes them like, oh, you can breathe. You just have to sniff. So that's like an example. Yeah. So there's like weird little strategies like that where you're like, huh.
I'll go that one in my back pocket for my next anxiety attack.
Hey, there you go. Yeah, a little sniffing.
Thank you so much, Charlotte. I was excited all day. This was the highlight of my day.
Oh, good. I'm glad. I know I wish it could go on for longer.
Maybe another time.
Hey, there's always other times for sure.
But yeah, thank you so much for having me on. It's I really enjoy talking about this, as you can probably tell. So,
yeah, I think you're going to help a lot of people.
Thank you. I hope so.
Thanks. Thanks a lot, Charlotte.
Yeah, we'll talk to you guys a different time.
You bet.
Well, there you go, folks. That was our little chat with Charlotte from Through Speech. And hey, like I said at the end there, if you know someone who could use those services, or you yourself feel like you could use those services and you live in the Alberta or BC area, go check out her website and see if you can get the hookup, because gosh, it sure does sound valuable to some people.
Yeah, it would be actually really neat to just do it, you know, if you had that kind of income, to just do just a few assessments, you know. How am I doing at like, I don't know, listening? But, you know, that's a good one to ask, I would say. Anywho.
Did you ever take an autism test? Have you ever taken the test like of where you sit on the spectrum?
No. Is that accessible to me?
Yeah. I'm talking out of my ass a little bit here, but I believe there is one that you can take that is online. And cool. I think there's legitimacy to it. Don't hold me to that. I'll look into it and then
okay.
But yeah.
Follow up.
Yeah.
Okay, sounds good. Yeah, I mean, gotta know what you're working with.
I took it.
So, what did it say?
Not super autistic.
No.
No.
Hmm.
No. Pretty.
Is there genetic?
Not. I don't know. Again, you're asking a fucking idiot. You're asking such a dumb.
I had more conversations with health professionals and humans experiencing weird symptoms.
Here's the thing.
Than I have ever met.
I know. Here's the thing. I've had well over 300 conversations with people to talk about that kind of shit, and what happens is, so like, you know, we're gonna record with someone tomorrow. All that information tomorrow, it's gonna go into my head. In through this year, and it's gonna like get in here, and I'm gonna go, whoa, this is so crazy.
It's gonna cause some inflammation.
This is like really interesting. Wow, I'm gonna get some inflammation. And then the next day, somebody else comes and talks, and it goes, and then all the stuff that's in here, it's like, oh, no, can't be in here. And it just goes out, and then it just replaces. So it's like, I only remember what I talked to the last person about.
I wonder if that's a CF thing.
It is. Have 100%. You
ever?
Yeah, yeah.
No, have you ever talked to people about that?
No, I haven't, but I've you know, a little bit of bro science here. I think it's because I just don't get enough oxygen.
To your brain?
To anything. But yeah, my brain. Yeah. Sure, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not getting enough oxygen in my body. I'm not getting enough oxygen in my brain. Although my O2 stats are pretty normal. So I don't think that's true.
Okay. Because that was what my grandmother said to me like 3 years ago when she was like, well, maybe he just doesn't get enough oxygen to his brain.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. What? Why did your grandmother say that? Did you say to your grandmother that I have a shitty memory?
No, I think I was complaining about something else, but
you were just talking shit about me.
I was talking shit about you. And my nana was like, well, there could be a perfectly reasonable biological explanation for this.
Was this Nana or was this Virginia?
It was Nana.
Yeah, Nana. Yeah, Nana would say that.
I know.
God rest her soul. All right. Well, folks, this was really fun. We love all of you. We're so glad that you're with us every week. And, my bad about not getting an episode up the week before last. I was really, really sick. But on the up and up. So, yay.
Thank you. Thanks.
All right.
For sticking with us.
That's it for this week.
Until next week.
Go fuck yourself.
Good.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.